Damn straight. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor. You are listening to Damn Radio, and I'm damn glad to have you. I've got the SCO Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting ended a couple of days ago, and then Vladimirovich Putin stayed on a couple extra days to do some separate meetings and to join Xi Jinping at the military celebration or commemorative event. This was actually yesterday, of the end of World War II from the Chinese side, the surrender of the Japanese, which occurred 80 years ago yesterday. So those are the events of the day, but there's some bigger events going on, as I kind of outlined in my RIC review last Sunday. And that is going to be the focus of where we go tonight and give you a little bit of history of that, a little bit of current events, a little bit of looking, because there was a rather lengthy 45 minute or so interview of Vladimir Vladimirovich, and you know what? It was a question and answer period. I'm sorry, not an interview. He gave a brief statement and then took a bunch of questions, and I kind of wanted to go into that as well. But before I do that, I thought it could be useful, if people don't know the state of the world affairs today, to give a bit of an idea as to what the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is. So when the Soviet Union collapsed, it's not like China and Russia were the greatest of partners, let's say, because I'm not so sure that they were. They worked together in some respects, and you know, they've never been at each other's throats, so to speak. But it's not as if the Russians don't feel as well that the next superpower is China. The next, if there's going to be hegemony, where's it going to come from? You know, that kind of thing. That the next likely, whatever you want to call it, heir to the throne, globally dominant person is China. Now, I'm trying to foster a little bit, not that I have anything to do with anything, but I'm trying to foster a somewhat different approach. What I would like is a different approach. And so when I get, from our point of view, perspective, Western, United States perspective, because I don't really care about the others. And but before I got to that, I had two rather interesting experiences today. So I had an issue with my truck. I had to go take it into the tire place and get him to look at a couple of things on the technical crap. And all I know is it cost me money. But I had to go first and drop it off, and I took an Uber back to my destination. And then later in the day, I took an Uber to there. And it was, I don't know what's going on with my transportation lately, but there's been just weird crap. I told you about the stuff with the Uber drivers in Lithuania. I told you about the drunk Russian on the train that got sat next to me. I mean, where do I get these? You know, I'm sitting around going, I told this story to somebody about the drunk Russian, and they go, man, you got some great stories. Well, I got some weird stories. This crap, it's like, why does it happen to me all the time? I don't understand. Why do I get all the weirdos? How come they're coming to my neck of the woods? And it's not that it caused me problems, and I find it, maybe they're come to me because I can handle that sort of thing. I don't know, but I get weird stories, but I find them to be rather I don't know, call it educational, call it character building, I don't know. It also, I seem to take things in a little bit of a different light. I don't know how, you know, people generally get mad if they, maybe it's a good thing that I find things funny most of the time, and not that I'm not serious, I can be serious as much as the next guy, but that I don't take things too seriously, you know, and don't create, you know, world events out of crap that doesn't need to be created, but I have some very strong political views. So when I got picked up from the first time this morning to be taken to you know, my location and get my day's events going, I had about a 10-minute ride with a guy in a nice sort of an SUV Uber thing, and he was from India, okay, and not too extremely talkative, you know. I got in, complimented him on his car, and said something about the weather. I don't remember what, and he said a couple of things about being from India, that he, you know, he liked the weather here, and he's from India, and had a very strong accent. Turned out he was from Punjabi. He was from Punjab, and he says, I said, well, how do you like it here? How long you been here? Blah blah. I asked him a little bit about himself, and I said, how do you like your Uber stuff? He goes, well, I like it, and I like what's going on. And he and I said something about liking Jai Shankar, you know, to see if he knew anything about politics over there, and about Modi and Jai Shankar, and that, you know, their country's doing some wonderful things over there. And the guy really opened up when I said something about his country. I mean, at first it was just going to be a polite little, you know, 2-second conversation, you know, and I'll go back to, you know, checking out emails on my phone or something. And he comes back and he goes, yeah, Jai Shankar, he says, and he goes into, I'm telling you, that people are getting on board, and people think differently, and it's not just me. So it's turning out I'm not as big a nut as I thought I was. And he goes, that Jai Shankar and Modi are doing things that look out for. And his analysis was, I think that Jai Shankar and especially Modi, they are looking out for. He got a tiny bit defensive, like it seemed like I knew something was going on, because I do, but I actually support exactly what Jai Shankar and Modi are doing. And what they are doing is their country's interests come first, and then they work together with the rest of the world to the extent possible, but they're not going to do things that are not in their country's or in the best interest of their country. And what he meant by that when he was talking about it was these sanctions, you know, that he thought, I don't know, I didn't say anything. I just told him that I liked listening to Jai Shankar and Modi when he brought something up, you know, and was talk. And I said that they were doing some good things in his country. And it really got him talking. And he, you know, he told me he spoke for the next 6-7 minutes to get me to where I was going, and told me about how, you know, he thought that they were doing the right thing as well, which is what I think. And, you know, I don't know how to quite address that, but it's interesting for me to just get opinions of regular people. This is an Uber driver, obviously came here at some point in his life from India, from Punjab, and obviously has a family here. He talked about his wife. He's doing reasonably well in the car he's driving. You know, he's got, it's a nice car, and, you know, Uber driving is a decent job. Those guys, you know, he had I don't know, 5,000 what do you call it, 5-star reviews, it said on his little profile when I was adding my thing, and And he was, you know, he's an interesting guy. I mean, hell of a job, seriously. I mean, why not? You know, talk about working for yourself and, you know, you draw work as much as you want or you work as little as you want, whatever. And, but he gave me a very good, I don't know what, impression. And he knew a little bit about his own country. Now he said that, you know, he's been here for a little while, but I didn't get any, you know, an opportunity of that because he was telling me about all the good things that Modi and Jaishankar's doing. And I always try to get a good Jaishankar one in because he's just funny to listen to because everybody in the West, and whenever we talk, we always get, you know, Scott Bessented or something where he will belittle anything that anyone else is doing anywhere in the world. And I don't understand that approach. I do not understand our Western approach where if you disagree with a country politically, they have to, they can't do anything right. You know what I mean? It's like over here, and I've said this before, that if you, I don't know, if you don't like gay people and a gay person, they will hate you because you don't like gay people. And there's nothing you can do to change that. You are a bad person no matter what. You know, giving money to charity, being a church person, I don't know what, maybe even being a Democrat. If you're a Democrat and you still don't like them, you know, that you still are a piece of dog doo-doo on the ground. Right. And there are certain people who think that way. A disagreement means you're written off. There is nothing good for you because you're written off. Well, I don't think that way. And I don't think a lot of the world works that way, but it seems pretty much prevalent all over Lithuania, like I outlined for you last night, and in quite a few places in America. And certainly in the Ukrainian world, there's nothing good that any Russian can do, period. And they can't even have a history or culture where you get to use their language. So that was instance number one. The second one, on the Uber trip to go pick up my truck and give them a pile of money that I don't have and don't like to give away. But truck's running better. How about that? And that's a positive. There's I don't know if it's a net positive. Maybe it's an well, it's not even equal because would I prefer to have the money or not? I don't know, but I'm babbling, so I'll get back to my point. This dude that drove me the second time back to the tire place, he was from Haiti. And he was talking about, you know, there's been all kinds of upheaval in Haiti. And I didn't bring it up. He brought it up. I was just sitting there, minding my own beeswax. And he said a few things and said he was from Haiti and said, you know, that he some of these people, I guess they get graded on talking, you know, or get graded on conversation. And some people don't want conversation. So, but how in the hell do you know? I mean, in all seriousness, if they start talking to you, I suppose it's your job to tell them you don't want to talk. I don't know. But or the reverse, if you say something to them, maybe they're not supposed to talk to you. I don't know. However that works is how it goes. But he said something. Seems like far more people are into world events, you know, because he was talking about it too. And he was talking about all of the issues going on in the world and how the U.S. might not be as positive in the world view scene, you know, and that has been more and more the conversations that I'm having both in the United States and out, but it's really weird. Anyway, those are certainly interesting things that occurred to me today, especially the dude from India that I talked to you about first, but it was funny to get in cars and get people that are talking to me. It wasn't like the, you know, the drunk Russian the other day on the train. That was pretty freaking hilarious. And, but very informative and, gave a good story to have. But one of the guys, the Both of them mentioned the meetings going on. Both of these guys mentioned the meetings going on over the past weekend in China and the world leaders that were meeting over there, including Narendra Modi and including Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin, as well as many others. Lukashenko was there for a bit. The leader of Pakistan. He may have been there too. But there's like 20 whole world leaders at this thing called the SCO, which is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Okay, now I'm going to tell you a little bit about what that actually is. Okay, the origins of it. The SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, actually started out in 1996 as the Shanghai Five. And it was Russia, China, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. And by the way, if you're ever interested in this, if you are a person who's not from Kyrgyzstan, a lot of them call it Kyrgyzia. And I know this because I've made this mistake, having been to Kyrgyzia a year or two ago and 2 years ago, went to a sanatorium there. And it was pretty cool. And so if you say Kyrgyzia, that is offensive to a person actually from Kyrgyzstan. You're supposed to call it Kyrgyzstan. And I have made that mistake in a few times. But I guess the Russians for a long time called it Kyrgyzi. And Kyrgyzi is they consider it rude. And so you got to make sure to call it Kyrgyzstan, because I've made that mistake myself, but I didn't know any better. But it's been explained to me that that's the way it is. So the purpose of the Shanghai Five, starting in 1996. Now remember, Soviet Union collapsed. We got nothing quite replacing it, but we have the Bush one and Clinton saying, no, there's going to be no NATO expansion. There's not, Russia's our friends now, blah, blah, blah. And I was still in the military at this point. I was out of the active duty and in the reserves. And I remember this when the Shanghai Five came up and some of the things we talked about in briefings and whatnot when we were getting ready to go on duty at the SCIF or something like that. And that's when the Shanghai Five came up. In 2001, they changed the name to and founded the actual SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So 5 years later, and Uzbekistan joined in, and the organization was created formally in Shanghai, and their charter stressed security, counterterrorism. Now, there's a lot of Muslim in that region of the world, on the Russian border, on the Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, any of the stands over there, Azerbaijan, and it was so. There's a lot of that, and there was some terrorism, and they're right near Afghanistan, and right near Iran and Pakistan, and they have had some issues in that area of the world, and so Russia's got a pretty strong counterterrorism, as does China, and they've expanded it into this SCO foundation or the SCO organization. But they do stress counterterrorism. But one of the other things they stress in their charter is non-interference with other countries and respect for the sovereignty of other countries that are associated in here. Because remember, the Soviet Union collapsed. These people didn't know where the hell they were going to go, all the ones on the inside. And there was a good amount of turmoil just because of that. And quite a bit of independence, and then the U.S. and the West all coming in and trying to stir it all up and get those people all stirred up, because it there's been a pretty strong anti-Russia ever since, and it's gotten stronger over the years, but so has the SCO. So in 2004, they organized as part of their meeting, and they've had a meeting every single year. And this one is called the Regional Anti-Terrorist Structure, RATS for the acronym. Regional Anti-Terrorist Structure, with a headquarters in Tashkent, which is beautiful. And the focus is on terrorism, separatism, and extremism. And the early work of this organization called for, and they all share, intelligence sharing and joint exercises. Okay. 2017, India and Pakistan both join, and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization becomes a true continental forum because now they cover almost the entirety of Southeast Asia. Because when you added in Pakistan and India, that's friggin' huge, right? Then in 2023, 6 years later, Iran joined in. So that covers almost all of them. There's a few other ones that are not in. Belarus joined in 2024. And the SCO reached its 10 full members that are on right now. They also have several observer and dialogue partners, and those are Mongolia, Afghanistan. That happened before the Taliban, but they're still members today. Turkey, and then they have the Asian nation, the states like Vietnam, Laos, Maldives, Malaysia, and Indonesia, that are also observer and dialogue partners. They participate, but they're not formal members. Now, the core principles are multipolarity, no hegemony, and equal sovereignty. FCO does not seek a bloc confrontation, any of that. The practical work, they have counterterrorism drills, energy, rail, and finance integration, and then culture exchange programs. So there is no defense pact like NATO. So this is structured a little bit more like an EU economic thing. And they're not as universal as the United Nations, and they're mostly for Eurasia and the global south. They're a venue where India, China, and Russia can all sit at the same table, just like BRICS. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is coming up here in just a second and the 2025 parts that they talked about this, because what they did this year is also extremely telling on the world stage, right? So in 2025 in Tianjin, the summit this year, Xi Jinping's proposals, these are his proposals that he put out for the entire group. It was the development bank. They want to start a development bank just like they have in BRICS. And they want to have an SCO energy platform. Remember me telling you about all the heavy industry projects and energy projects, and the, for example, Russia helping build the nuclear power plant with 6 reactors in India. And so they're talking about all of this, and Xi Jinping's proposals included $1.4 billion in loans that China is ready to put up for this, and something called and I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly. I've heard it said in a couple of ways, but I believe it's called Baidu. And Baidu is its access to the Baidu platform. And the Baidu platform is kind of like our GPS or, Russia's, what else would it be? I forget what the Russian version of it is, but it's, however you slice it, it is a GPS and with varying levels. The same thing that ours uses, global positioning satellites, not your Google Earth, not Elon Musk, Starlink or whatever it is. We're talking GPS. And what Xi Jinping said was that now they're going to spread this knowledge to everyone in the area for commercial and governmental purposes, which means they can use it for, they're going to have common geopositioning, targeting systems that all of them have access to in the entire Southeast. Okay, so no, it's not a security organization, but Xi Jinping has said that China is going to allow all of them access to their GPS data. Because right now, there are several major ones in the world, and China has one, U.S. has one, which most people subscribe to the U.S. one, and this is more of the hegemony thing, but people are there, we're going separate directions, you know what I mean? That's what's happening. So let's keep up on this thread here before we get to the next part. The attendance, there were 20 leaders, Modi, Putin, and Xi Jinping together, ministers from a lot of the ASEAN ministers, but Indonesia was absent this year due to all the protests going on. I don't know if you've heard about that, but I tell you what, it's a scary period of time for Indonesia right now. There have been some serious confrontations brought about by giving a lot of benefit to elected and appointed governmental officials, giving them these huge sort of benefit packages like luxury, luxury stuff. Here they do it, but here they hide it a lot better. There they kind of said, yeah, this is what we're doing. We run the government. Rest of you, screw you. Looks like we get everything and you get nothing. And the leader was in bad shape, and they've been having some serious protests over there, and pretty serious. So bad that he canceled his trips, and they reversed all of these packages, is what I understand. They reversed them all now and reversed all travel for them, including his own. So he didn't go to the summit, is what I found out. Let's see. For the optics, this is the first SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, that included Belarus as a full member, and the India and China, that's a big deal, you know, because it continues on from last year. And Xi Jinping is working hard on this, and Vladimir Putin is working hard on this, and so is Modi, to signal that you can work together with people, even if you have areas where you disagree. Why can't America learn to do that? I don't understand why we can't do that. We have to, I don't know, call them, you know, they're evil. Everybody's evil, like Besant. We'll get to him in a minute. But there's some notable quotes. Vladimir Putin, he says, we aren't thinking of how to outplay others. We're thinking of how to organize our own work. I thought that was a great quote. And we'll get to the question that brought that up a little bit later. Now, Maria Zakharova, when she was analyzing this SCO meeting that came up, she said, we're strengthening fair multilateralism and restoring the UN's coordinating role without selective interpretation, because one of their big complaints is that the UN is always interpreted against people that aren't, I don't know what, favored. In the club, as it were. Don't kiss the rear ring or the rear end of the West. That kind of thing. So when I saw the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, I immediately, and the big meeting and how big it really was this year, it got me to thinking about quite a bit about the BRICS and quite a bit about what why this keeps getting more and more. People are getting much more open about talking about the multilateralism and honoring your own country, like the Indian guy that I rode with today, and saying, you know, you need to ask for what's best for your own. These are things that to normal people, like most of us are self-evident. But why is it so difficult for our leaders, and especially in the West on the government side, to what has happened to us where we must be dominating everywhere, and we can't honor and respect other countries and their notions of fair play, of what they wish to do? Why are we condemning India because they're buying gas from Russia? What gives us that right is my point. What I mean, I suppose we have the right to do anything, so right's not the correct word, but what gives, who made us the arbiter? This is why I like listening to Jai Shankar so much, because he just punches people right in the face with it. Somebody asked him this the other day, and he says, look, you this some commentator from whatever channel he was being interviewed on, and Jai Shankar says to him, he says to Jai Shankar, he goes, why are you, why are you buying oil from Russia? Geez, you know, Russia's the bad guy, and basically went off on China, and you are bad people, basically is what he says to him. And then at the end, he outlines this question as if it's some kind of a global attack here that he's going to attack Jai Shankar, as you know, because Jai Shankar is, and Jai Shankar is just the foreign minister. He's not allowing his country to do anything, but he isn't condemning it either. And so he defends his own country. So the guy asks the question and says, why are you buying this stuff from Russia? And he goes, who are you to ask me that question? Why are you asking me this? He says, basically, it's like, I mean, Jesus, who cares? Oh, you know, where you get your oil from, and what makes us, including Donald Trump, by the way, all the way up the line, who are we to condemn another country for looking out for its best interests? Should India be buying gas and oil from us at a 10 to 20% increase in what they're buying it from their next door neighbor? Is that what's supposed to be happening? Is China not supposed, this is why Donald Trump wants to tariff and sanction them as well, is because they're doing business with their neighbor? This is what we're supposed to do? Let's get to a little bit of history here, because the reason, part of the reason for the expansion is the exact same reason. And remember that China is right in on this too, because this has affected Russia, China, India as well as all the stands that we talked about in there, that the U.S. is forever after, because we have to be able to control the world, right? We have to control it. And so let's talk about, because NATO expansion has been, you know, they're even trying to expand NATO into like Georgia, which is also Southeast Asia. They want to expand it into Azerbaijan and into places like that. They want to impact all of these places, and NATO has made their efforts. So let's go through in segment two, just to remind everybody what has happened since the collapse of the Soviet Union, right? On every side of Russia, this has taken place. 1999, after there was not going to be any expansion, not one inch to the east, Poland, Hungary, and Czech Republic, all east, all Eastern Europe, and that's 1999. 2004, 5 years later, what they refer to as the Big Bang. We have Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, all three of the Baltic states, Slovakia, Slovenia, Bulgaria, and Romania, all at the same time. Seven countries joining former Soviet republics, by the way, in one way or another, although, you know, some of them were part of a different country when that happened. And then in 2009, 5 years later, Albania and Croatia. 2017, Montenegro. 2020, North Macedonia. 2023, we had Finland, with a 1,300-kilometer border with Russia, by the way. And then 2024, we had Sweden. And the Baltic Sea kind of turned into, except apart from Kaliningrad and Leningrad, turned into a NATO lake, you know, kind of like the Azov Sea down in the southeast Russia. It touches near the Black Sea, or comes out near the Black Sea, but the Azov Sea is now, with the Crimea, is now surrounded completely by Russia, turned it into, it's not international waters, maybe in the middle, I forget what the rule is, something to have to do with 200 kilometers out. I could be wrong on the distance. If it's 200 kilometers out, because that's all you can control of any body of water or something, according to international law. I don't remember what the law actually says about that, but it's rather interesting because apparently if you could pick up an aircraft carrier and place it in the middle of that lake, you could control that lake if you could, or not patrol that lake, or if you could get a submarine in there or do something. If you're completely surrounded, you don't have to have permission if you can get there without being noticed. But in order to get there, you'd be noticed, I think. Anyway, the infrastructure and posture of NATO during that same time period, there's something they call EFP, Enhanced Forward Presence. So from 2017, there are 4 multinational battalions, but in 2022, there are now 8 whole battle groups, okay? Mostly funded by the U.S. in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia. And permanent U.S. presence, we have a U.S. Army garrison, Poland, which didn't exist when I was in the military in the 90s, at Poznan. We have Camp Kosciuszko, I forget how they say it, and supporting the 5th Corps headquarters, all in Poland. I mean, pretty damn close to Russia. Well, on the border with Belarus. And we have now these missile defense systems that NATO has put up, Aegis Ashore ballistic missile defense systems, in Divisalu, Romania, in 2016, and now, since 2024, in Poland. People are condemning what we're doing, or on the other side, they're condemning what we're doing, and now it has forced Russia to put, they have air defenses all over Belarus, and that they're putting nuclear weapons in Belarus, too. Just like America does by sharing our nuclear umbrella with places in Europe. And that's not what non-proliferation was supposed to be doing. And there's air policing, continuous Baltic air policing and AWACS patrols, all funded by the U.S., nuclear sharing. B-61-12 modernization, F-35A, is certified as dual capable, which means it can carry nuclear weapons, and the UK rejoins NATO's nuclear sharing posture. Because that is bringing it up quite a bit of new structure and, capabilities for NATO during that time period. And what has Russia done to counter this? So Kaliningrad, which was part of the Russian satellite, and they kept it as part of Russia proper, and it's on the Baltic Sea, but it used to be connected quite a bit more. So Kaliningrad has Iskander-M missiles. They have the S-400 defense systems, and Bastion coastal defenses along that area, which they didn't have before, but they upped it because of what we're doing all over Poland. And in the Crimea, after 2014, turned it into a fortress for air defense and capabilities for Russia, because that, and it used to be part of Ukraine, but now it's solid Russia. Belarus now hosts Russian tactical nuclear weapons since 2023, and the military districts have modernized their nuclear triads with Yar, Sarmat, and Avangard hypersonics. They have their Kaliber cruise missiles and Bastion defenses. This is some serious escalation that's gone on, mostly in the last 10 years. And what has China done during this time period, just so you know? Because that's where the SCO comes in, but the strong, the military might of all of this is China and Russia, but India is no slouch either. And Chinese counters are joint bomber patrols that they're patrolling the Pacific with Russia and in the Sea of Japan. They have naval drills with Russia, anti-submarine exercise with Russia, and now Russia's had it for some time, I believe, as well as their own. They work together. The Baidu, that GPS system I was telling you, on the Chinese government side, which is, it's enabled their targeting and their logistics, all are common. So this is being set up as a, you know, I don't like to call it Axis versus Allies because that's ancient history, but you kind of see where we're going with this. And India is trying to play all sides or play its own side, you know, and that was one of the comments that Jai Shankar made too. He goes, look, why do we have to pick sides? Our side is India. We act what is best for India. U.S. acts for what's best for it. In fact, it dictates what's best for everyone else. But we do not accept that. We defend what's best, or we pick what's best for India. Period. And how can you fault the guy? I mean, you really can't. You know, you hear Donald Trump say things similar, by the way. And I don't know, maybe Donald Trump is a better diplomat than we've had in a very long time. And I wonder how, well, I would wonder his thoughts on this, but I don't want to get too far aside because I still got a good amount of information to sling your way on this Thursday evening, my last show of the week, until my Sunday evening deep dive. And this one, let's talk about the China's state GPS real quick. It's completed in 2020, state-owned, run by China's satellite navigation office. Equivalents would be your U.S. GPS systems, your Russian's GLONASS, and the EU's Galileo system, so that we each have our own. The commercial uses, you'd use it for trucking, maritime shipping, precision for agriculture, telecom, and synchronization. In the SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, they're using it for all of their, and I found this extremely interesting, for their wide logistics. You know, the SCO, everywhere, all over the SCO, which is everybody in the all 10 countries and the partner countries, which were another 10, 12, right? 2020 showed up to the organization this time. And so they all use the same logistics system. And that logistics is this system that we're Baidu. And they use it for rail corridors, oil pipelines, gas pipelines, trade routes, shipping corridors, stuff like that. Military uses, they use it for encrypted service, targeting, missile guidance, jamming resistance, integrated into drone swarms and naval navigation. I got the hiccups. Sorry about that. And then, but it's not like new Google Earth. It's not Starlink. You know, a direct parallel would be your GPS sort of thing. And why does it matter? Because it's a shared infrastructure and sovereignty kind of taken away from your GPS structure, right? It's open service guides taxis. It's encrypted channels guide missiles. That's what's, you know, it's a big deal for Xi Jinping to offer this to everybody in the group. I don't know if there was any talk about money. I didn't hear that part. But this is a pretty big deal. As part of this Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was very beautifully done. Press conference and question answer period for Vladimir Vladimirovich, like I told you about before. And it was a good question and answer period. And it was 45 minutes. Obviously, I'm not going to go into it, but there were a number of good questions in there. He was asked about what he would consider some of the results of his China visit. And he responded that it was very, very positive and that it had a long agenda of the 2-day agenda, but the 2 extra days that he was spending allowed for substantive talks with many global leaders, including Xi's global governance initiative is very important, because this global governance is kind of in contrast to what they see as the Western-dominated UN, important for BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. He was asked about the power of Siberia 2 pipeline that I talked to you about several days ago. That power of Siberia pipeline 1 was finished, and their pipeline 2 that's supposed to go through Mongolia, they were talking about as well. And so he was asked, and there was talks that this might be, they were going to finalize it and come to a deal for the, because they were still having some structural concerns about how they get through Mongolia and whether it's going to be all, I don't know what, whatever agreements they need to come to, whether they were going to be able to do them. And he said that they were finalized. And so now another, and the reason I bring this up is joint intergovernmental and continent-wide, let's call it, Asia-wide concern. Because it's infrastructure. And we have none. You know, I talked about this the other day. What is the U.S. counter to this? The Keystone Pipeline? Remember that? We were going to have a pipeline to get stuff from North America and from Canada all the way down south to Mexico and further, and connect it to other pipelines or do something like that, because we have natural gas that we could supply. And what happened? First day Biden took office, he canceled their permits and canceled the whole thing. Billions of dollars lost. Why? Politics. You know, you can disagree with Russia and China all you want. You can disagree with anybody over there, you know, for having a different structure of government or for being bad people, as Besant called them. They're bad countries, is basically what he said. These are bad guys. Oh, okay. Why? Because you disagree with their politics? It's freaking nonsensical to listen to these idiots talk about bad people. Oh yeah, America's full of great people in government, isn't it? There isn't any bad people over here. That isn't. Did I just? It was bad grammar, and I apologize for that. I generally am better behaved. However, let's talk about this, because another question to. To Vladimir Vladimirovich was on NATO and EU expansion and on Ukrainian membership. And he said the following. NATO, of course, that's a red line for Russia and always has been. But as far as being associated with the EU, the economic union, that's up to Ukraine. You know, why? Fine, we don't care. You want to be a member of an economic union? Great. You want to be a member of NATO with more bases on our border after you've done what you've done all over the other countries of the world? You know, you're not doing it in Ukraine. And they've been saying that for 20 freaking years, well, 30 freaking years. Then he was asked a rather interesting question about meeting Zelensky and direct to him. And he said, you know what? I'm not ruling it out, but Zelensky's legitimacy is in question. But if he's ready, meaning if you've organized something, if there's something to agree upon, or you intend to come and, you know, capitulate, basically, let him come to Moscow. So he basically said, you want to come? Come to Moscow. So there's not a, I doubt there's a red carpet waiting for the old Z man, but Putin said, come on down. You want to come? Come on over. I hope we have something to talk about, and we shall see what we shall see when that happens. He said, and then he was asked, and here, this was a good question. Is multipolarity real yet? Is there such a thing as multipolarity? Does it really exist? And that was asked by a Russian reporter. And it was, it was but interesting and not hugely deep, but well put, you know, to ask him specifically about this. And he said, yes, contours do exist, but no new hegemon, he's meaning China, should endeavor to dominate. And he says that he believes the term multipolarity equals equality of countries under the law. So basically, legal equality for whatever your country membership is. I mean, the argument is between him, Xi Jinping, and Modi too, Modi especially, in fact, is that if the UN treated people equally, none of these other world authorities would matter. But the UN, you can always count on the fact that nobody will ever condemn Israel for whatever anything Israel wants to do. Israel could, I don't know, go and bomb Qatar and nobody would care. And nobody would condemn them for it. And Qatar is a good actor on the global stage. You know, they could, hell, if Israel decided that Greece was a bunch of bad people, they didn't want around, and Israel went and did something bad, nobody'd condemn them. U.S. would veto anybody trying to sanction them or to say they've done anything bad. I think it's a very bad structure myself. And but they're all too eager to, you know, all too eager to condemn, you know, Russia or China for anything, or even India. And India has been saying for decades, look, we're the biggest country, we're modern, we got this, we got that, we should have much more of a say in the organization, but we don't even get equal representation, really. And they've been talking about that for a while. And they said if UN started to be a little more. So all these organizations that are coming up, BRICS, which is going to be dominant. I believe that next year is China. But even if it's India, I really would like to try and make it to the, I didn't make it to the Brazil one this year. And it kind of pisses me off that I didn't. And I should have, but I didn't. They also made these crazy little, difficult. Anyway, I don't need to talk about that. I still got some more stuff. Then they asked him about his frozen money. And I haven't found anything that says they've taken any of the money. There's been some new talks about this $300 billion that's Russian money sitting in Western banking. And they've been using, you know, they keep squeezing the interest out of it and giving it to Ukraine. But they have, and Ukraine and a bunch of other states in the EU have been trying to get to the corpus, the assets themselves, like not taking the earnings from it, but they want to take the assets themselves. And some genius on the of the Ursula von der Leyen type said, we need to take all $300 billion and just give it to Ukraine for rebuilding. And trust me, if their lawyers could figure out a way to even say that they could justify this somehow, that money would be gone in a heartbeat. But they asked Putin about this, and he said if they did seize the money, that would destroy global finance, and frankly, any Western any positive view that anybody has of the Western banking or finance systems that remains. He said the profits only approach that they're using right now is still harmful but less catastrophic. And he warns of world economic fragmentation. But that's exactly what's going on, is global economic fragmentation. Because even in this SCO, they had a huge portion of it that where they talked about what do you call it? Using their own inter-country funds, like using rubles to buy goods from Kazakhstan and using whatever money they use in, I don't know, Azerbaijan to buy, well, that they're not a member, but in Uzbekistan to buy stuff from, and I don't remember, I have some, but I don't remember what they're called, to buy things from Russia, right? They using your own currency is also a big deal. Now, in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, they've listed it. They are intentionally de-dollarizing. They're telling people to prep for it, pay in your own currencies. Then they talked about the battlefield situation, and that's been bad news for Ukraine, and nobody's even talking about it. But, you know, I tell you, watch my favorite one is watch Military Summary Channel on YouTube, and they provide every day the content of how many kilometers the Russians have advanced, what cities they've taken, and all that. Russia's advancing. Ukraine is shifting brigades, and Kyiv cannot mount large-scale offensive, is what Vladimir Putin said straight up today, and he's right. He asked about a Trump meeting, and he said, and they asked him seriously, he said, what happened in the limo? And he didn't tell him. He says, you know, we had a brief chat in English, and it was very cordial, and he referred him back to Alaska. He also said that Trump's invited to Moscow, that there's an invitation out there, that he can have it. And then they were asked about the what's the SCO's global role, Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Is it against the West? Is it against U.S. And this is where he said that reference that I said earlier in the show. And he said, the SCO is not designed to be against anyone. It is a cooperative platform where we are doing our own work, where we conducting and taking care of our own work and our own issues. That, you know, we're not against anybody. We're just trying to best run the area that concerns us right here. And, you know, what's wrong with that, with any of these explanations? Well, at the same time this was going on, and I know you, a lot of people probably think I'm a nut for doing this, but I watch and I try to keep track of Maria Zakharova's briefings. And there's something else going on that I left Russia too early, it appears. And I kind of had sort of a mini invite. But I don't have time for that stuff, and unfortunately, I have to fund it all myself. And this was in Vladivostok. They're having an economic council there, and it's a pretty big deal, right? And Maria Zakharova gave her briefing from there, where she is present at the Vladivostok briefing. And they were talking about the 80th General Assembly of the UN coming up. And the West keeps pushing what they refer to rules-based order, but whose rules are we talking about? And they're using this to override the UN Charter. So she pretty much made pretty blatant double standards attack against the U.S. and the people in the U.N. She said, for example, the U.S. is denying visas to Palestinian representatives, at the request of Israel, by the way, which I think is nonsense. And she said, this is a breach of the UNHQ agreement. She's right, by the way. And then she argues that the U.N., must not be selectively interpreted, but it always is. And this is why other people in the world have a problem with it, because the U.S. and the West will twist it to whatever suits their purposes at the time, and then twist it back when it doesn't go their way. That's welcome to the UN. You know, it's been that way for a long time. She gave a Ukraine update saying, she gave the weekly casualty and attack ledgers. She condemns the Western arms continuing to go to Kyiv under the Trumpster, by the way. More Patriots, more F-16s, Starlink. She criticizes the EU for talking about troop deployments and saying they're still doing it, although I've heard quite a bit that it's now called the Coalition of the Unwilling, because most of those who are willing to throw their own troops in for either peacekeeping or anything else, especially in France, but anybody else has been involved as well, their people aren't supporting. Their people are very much against it. There's been some heavy-duty protests going on. So she's criticizing them again, saying, well, their own people don't even want it. And she talked again, and this is accurate, people. They've talked about U.S. biolabs in Ukraine. These have been found. They exist. And there's a good amount of evidence about them. And, you know, we'd be all pissed off if Russia put bio labs in Belarus and we found out about it. But we'll happily throw some into Ukraine for you, right? Or I suppose I shouldn't say we, should I? Should I say the deep state? Those people, you know. She brought up one more thing that I found, and I don't think I've mentioned it enough, and I probably should. So if you don't know, and it's getting worse, and there was another attempt at it by the old Z monster last week. The old Green Goblin said that MPs are doing the same thing. What do they call it? The Rada, Verkhovna Rada, their legislative body in Ukraine, is allegedly putting something out there to make the Ukrainian Orthodox Church illegal, kind of a terrorist organization for working with Russians. So, and they were going to jail the head of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. So about however many years ago, I don't remember the exact date, but they declared, these same geniuses declared, that the Russian Orthodox Church, which has been around for a very long time in Ukraine, that it couldn't be based on, you know, you can't be partners with Russia for church, by the way. This is nonsense that you couldn't do it. And Americans would have a fit if you said, you know, geez, you're a Catholic. Well, you can't be Catholic. You can't be Catholic in America. Sorry, we don't allow that. You know, or any church, whatever it happened to be, whether you moved here or not, you should be able to worship how you feel, but not in Ukraine, friends and neighbors. Oh no. They made the Russian Orthodox Church actually change its name to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. And now they're accusing the head of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, who is Russian, that you cannot have services in anything related to Russian. And he has been jailed repeatedly because he works with the Russian Orthodox Church and he won't comply. And so now they've jailed him. This is, and it keeps getting worse. Ukraine is not your good friend and neighbor. They just are not. She also talked a little bit about Vietnam and Azerbaijan detentions and the 80th anniversary, Libya, 70 years of ties with them, you know, just commemorating some stuff. And then the Russia-China integrations. She reminded everyone that now 90% of trade between Russia and China, more than 90%, is done in the yuan and the ruble, no dollar. And crazy stuff. I don't know. There was, you know, this economic council going on at the same time as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization called for a lot of information, to be spread out among different places. There was also a couple of good Lavrov speeches today. But there was a guy that I like listening to, and I wish I could remember his first name. I think it's Yakov. I'm pretty sure it is Yakov. And I watch him fairly regularly. He appears on the program of Vladimir Solovyov that I tell you about. That come on. I try to watch the Sunday night ones. You know what? I saw recently that he doesn't do them every night anymore, for whatever reason, or at least maybe they're not saved on the platform. I don't know if maybe they've limited access outside of the country, but it appears that I only get the Sunday night ones now, and so they're not 7 or 5 nights a week. They're only one. And generally, I tried to watch the Sunday night ones anyway, but they've been pared down a little bit, it looks like. But this guy named, I believe it's Yaakov Kedmi, he did an analysis of the events afterward, like the military parades and the military functions. And if you haven't watched any of those, you can see quite a bit of it on YouTube as well. And I watched some of that, and it was quite impressive. It was an impressive display of military might from China, and a good amount of world leaders there checking it out. So if you get a chance, you might just for interest's sake go and have a look at it. And he wanted to talk about the military symbolism of it all, and there was a good interview of him that was conducted. And in China's victory parade, they have developed their own, the same as Russia, hypersonic missiles, their own laser systems. Have you heard about the Russian laser systems? They tested again, and Russia has now mass-produced several of these. From the lasers that can take out drones. Get on YouTube and check that out too, because that is impressive. And watching them take care of it. They also introduced, and Yaakov Kedmi was talking about it, saying that they have AI in their weapon systems and networked warfare. Now, this is scary stuff. We have all these movies that we watched at, Terminator and, you pick it, iRobot, that technology comes in defending America, actually ends up discovering what's best for us. Is anybody else worried about that just a tiny bit with AI, especially with AI in a weapon system? How long is this going to go on? And did everybody see the picture? He commented on this too. But when I first saw the picture, I was like, wow, that picture is going to be all over the place. It was Xi Jinping, Putin, and Kim Jong-un together on the podium watching the victory parades together. And remember, North Korea's got a pretty powerful army as well. Don't go thinking they're any slouches, because they are not. And it's those three together on the podium. You can't help but think militarily with the three of them there, because tell you what, that's. And remember, they're talking about whoever suggested this. Did you hear about Kellogg's meeting that got cut short to nothing, meeting with this coalition of the unwilling? And the speculation is that he went in there and was telling them what they were going to do instead of whatever. But either way, this meeting that was supposed to take place all day long turned into less than, by some accounts, 25 minutes, and other accounts, maybe 40. But either way, it didn't last long at all, and off he went. And so there's been talk about that. The parade was, somebody asked this Cadme guy if he thought that it was a huge display or a warning to the West. And he said, he goes, listen, that was an extremely professional parade. And it was a demonstration of a large superpower. Now, Xi Jinping sat with Vladimir Putin on the stage in Moscow, and now Vladimir Putin returned the favor. And I said something about it way back then. I want to see what Xi Jinping puts out with their parade. That parade was pretty damn impressive. And, you know, they're trying to one-up each other, and who knows what'll come of it. But they're hypersonics in China, they are unmatched except by Russia's, which are slightly better, according to all accounts. But China's got some pretty serious hypersonics, too. And their lasers for missile defenses are pretty unique. Excuse me, I got a bit of a cough here. Excuse me. I think, and he made a comment that I kind of mirror, and I said something similar when I was commenting on the lack of Western leaders showing up at the 80th anniversary of the end of the of World War II in Russia. There's no reason that there shouldn't, that they shouldn't work together to celebrate something of that nature. And usually in a five, you know, on the, I forget what they call it when it's on the 5 year anniversary or the 10 or the 15 on years like that, that are something better. They usually can get people to show up, but nope. And nobody showed up in Russia except a couple of Western presidents from like Serbia and Hungary or whatever. And then they got beat the hell up for it politically. It's nonsense. And I feel the same way about this 80th. You know, obviously we can't do it at this period in time, but it would be extremely brave and show an incredible amount of stones and a huge impact on the world if Donald Trump showed up himself or sent Marco Rubio to go to something of this huge significance. Not to participate in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I mean specifically to go and commemorate the loss of some 20 million Chinese people because of the attacks by Japan during World War II. But nope, we cannot, what do you call it, compartmentalize. We do not compartmentalize. Again, if you're evil in one thing, you're evil in all. And I think that is a huge mistake in life and in politics. And I wish we had more politicians who subscribe to the, you know, small steps theories that, you know, you're not going to change, you know, conquer Rome in a day, whatever that saying goes. You're not going to take care of it. And we can't get anything accomplished because we can't get anything accomplished. Start small. You know, I mean, Jesus, be a friend. You know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, take a bite. Then take another one. You know, does that mean it's not worth it? It isn't worth it to talk to that guy. You'll never get anything done. Well, okay. Well, guess you'll never get anything done then. Because that's how it works. And it's that same in everything. I wish we could apply it to our politics as well, because we really suck at global politics, in my humble opinion, and have for a while. So, I don't know. Let's keep going. I still got a couple of little segments here that I wish to do. And on this one, here's where I get to my Scott Bessent, and I don't like him. I for whatever reason, this guy doesn't say anything positive ever, and it's like, geez, what is wrong with you? And so he was asked, where's my reference? Because I had the whole article was there somewhere. And it's he was asked, damn it, who was it? Was it Politico? I can't remember. And he was asked about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And he was asked about it, and he said, listen, those guys, this is where he called them all. He said the SEO is just a performative basis. It's like a circus, basically. Well, it's a performance. Jesus, they don't have anything going on. It's a performance. And so, yeah, all these people get together and have a performance. They're doing performative measures for you to fake, to do what? For what purpose? Are they here to scare you? And then he said that the members of the SEO, all 20 of them, these are just these members are what he called bad actors, right? So he says no definition. He didn't give any definition for what a bad actor really is. We just get to say, well, he's a bad guy. Therefore, you don't deal with him. That's my point. We don't have to do anything because, oh, they're bad actors. Tell enough people that, guess what they are? Bad actors, right? And then by the way, performative basically means, ah, that's just, optical show. The word in Russian is called a pakhazukha. And I always like that word because it's basically a flea circus, let's call it. That's a pachas, and a pachazuka doesn't mean flea circus, but it's basically the equivalent. A pachazuka is a fake display of something. Oh, geez, they're gonna go, put on a display for a day. Your boss is coming in, you clean the place up, but on a regular day, the place is a shit show. You know what I mean? If the corporate office isn't coming in, from afar, the place is a dump, but the day they show up, boy, it's spotless. Remember the US Air Force colonel who got relieved of command for actually, was it Air Force? I don't, you know what it might have been? It might have been an army guy. I can't recall, but he actually got relieved of command by a general, and this is the right thing to do, by the way. I might have to look this up in on Google and see if I can find it. But way back when I was still serving in the army, a guy really did get in trouble for having his troopies paint the grass because there was somebody important coming in, and they painted the grass. I mean, how foolish is that? How stupid do you got to be to paint the grass? Well, my percentages keep going down. I was just going to say I'm 95% certain that occurred, but maybe it's only 90. But I remember it being, something that we actually looked into back when to see if it was there. And I can't remember if it was in Stars and Stripes or whatever military, Army Times, something like that. But there was a story out there, and we all debated it for a good number of days. That is performative, right? Yeah, this is great stuff. We're putting on a show for you. So I'd like to give a couple of rebuttals for that, because we just went over a bunch of them. And what about the SEO meetings was performative, was a show? There's some pretty big deals they talked about, Mr. Bessent. And one of them is the banking that they have talked about, that they're putting a new development bank in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, just like they did in BRICS, to mean that people that are a member of this SEO, just like members of BRICS, can get money from China mostly through the development bank. Now, I think that's a pretty big deal because they don't have to go and kiss the ring or to lick the rear end of the Western-dominated World Bank or International Monetary Fund. That's why they're doing it. It's exactly why they're doing it, because otherwise they're going to be required to sanction somebody at some point in history without any ability to not do it, because their money is all dependent on being given to them only from the International Monetary Fund through the World Bank. And who needs that if you're a developing country and have any idea that you would like to be independent and don't want to be controlled like a colony from, from 150 years ago. So I think that's a big deal. The energy ties that they talked about, that's a huge deal. That, they talked about this pipeline thing coming through, and they approved the Mongolian going through Mongolia. And so now most of them can all get very cheap Russian gas the same way that India and China are. And what have we done, Mr. Besant? We got nothing. You know, this. And how are you going to combat that? Sanctions? Good luck. You know, it's not going to work. And you don't have to be a genius to figure that out. And so talk about political grandstanding, Mr. Besant. Oh, geez, they're just bad actors, and this is all just a clown show. You know, that's it. Oh, yeah. That's the clown show and not you. I probably shouldn't beat up on him so bad. I mean, he's got to have some good redeeming qualities, but why in the world can't you just call it like it is? You know, if people are always going to, it's once again, this is what they call cancel culture. And he is just as guilty of it as anybody else talking about rainbow flags, right? It's just, well, geez, where's your rainbow flag? I don't want one. Oh, that means you hate gays. No, it means I don't want a rainbow flag. That's not a huge focus in my life. You know, why do we have to come out and be told that these are all bad people and that they're behaving performatively when you could just say, well, you know, they've got some good things going on over there. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Or it's not what we would like and we disagree with some of the things that they're doing, but it could be positive for their area. I don't understand it. Makes no sense. What you're trying to sell me. And if you would be more reasonable about it, perhaps I'd buy more of your words or something else. They talked about the power of Siberia too. That's hard infrastructure. That's a big deal. Where's our hard infrastructure? We can't even build a rail system that was supposed to cost 36 million or billion for a high speed rail. 36 million, I'm sorry. Now it's 100 million. And no, it is billion, I'm sorry. And it hasn't gone anywhere. And they've curtailed it to just a Bakersfield. You know, they've cut it by a third. They've cut it by two-thirds. There's only a third of it left. And they still won't get it done. There's no end in sight. Where's Texas high-speed rail? That's been talked about for 30 years. The high-speed rail they got in the northeast of the United States, that shit hasn't gone anywhere. And their high-speed rail doesn't even go the speed that China had in high-speed rail in the 60s. So where's our infrastructure? What do we got? What have we done? I don't know, but this is just performative. Sorry to beat up on him. What about RATS, the real counter-terrorist coordination, that they had some pretty big development on that? SCO is not NATO, right? They aren't there, but they had workshops where real projects got hammered out. The multipolarity is no longer just a slogan world. It's like what Vladimir Putin said, you know, we're taking care of our own issues. We're just getting work done over here. That's what we're doing. Where's us? You know, it's like they're working off of engineering diagrams, and what are we working off of? You know, what are we working off? Do we have any sort of even regional stuff? Oh, anyway, I've been on a roll tonight. Sorry about that. So over the next 12 months, the SCO had a bit of a guide. Where are we going to go? What are we going to do the next 12 months till we meet again, basically? What are we going to do? The SCO is going to finance, you know, have financing structures in place for a lot of different things through banking, through bond issuance for other countries, and through this development bank that they're creating to allow loans and notes for countries. They're going to roll out all of this Baidu GPS equivalent all over Eurasia. And leg one of Power of Siberia 2 is already done, and leg two of Power of Siberia was just agreed upon, and they intend to have two of their milestones met by the time they meet next year. These people come up with international projects and follow through on them. What do we do? I mean, seriously, what do we do? We can't even get regional infrastructure projects done in the U.S. on any level because all the money's given to the state. And I'm not against that, but the structure of it means that you can't really do it. And international cooperation, you know, I went through that. We need to have a wake-up call. Is what I think, that the U.S. needs a serious wake-up call. Important quotes from this. Contours, of, like Putin said, the contours of multipolarity do exist in our structures where everyone is equal. I mean, that's some powerful stuff. Zakharova, the problem isn't the U.N. itself. The UN's a good organization, basically. But the problem is the West always bends the charter to meet its own needs. And this is accurate. Okay, this is not Sam's dream. This is the fact that we bend the charter to meet our own needs willy-nilly whenever we feel like it, with no real justification except politics. So why doesn't anyone trust us? Because we bend the rules. Rules for me, not for thee. Happens all the time. I mean, that's one of the things I bitch about the most in life, is don't have a set of different rules for different people. The same rules should apply to everyone. Equally, by the way, but that's not the case. Yakov Kedmi, what did he say? China showed its hypersonics, lasers, and new nukes. Nobody has anything like this, he said. And by the way, I think he's right, too. Do we have any serious military parades in the United States? I mean, we do for the Army's birthday and for other stuff like that. But do we have an equivalent where we go out and show our might? You know, I really got to look into that. I remember seeing a couple on 4th of July and things like that, but most of those are not really for the purpose of glory or showing our capabilities. I wonder, you know, I'm going to have to look into that. I don't think we do. If we do, let me know, SamuelT@internationalflavor.com, and I'd be happy to do so, or live@damradio.com. And JR will make sure I get it. Baidu guides taxis and missiles all at the same time. Is that multipolarity in orbit? We wonder. That could be kind of cool. So important terms that we've talked about today. I mean, we've got the Baidu system. We got Zakharova in her 3-hour briefing on the UN rule bending, Ukrainian ledgers, Kedmi's analysis, this performative nonsense that we've had to listen to from Besant, who said that, oh, geez, it's all empty over there. There's nothing to see here, folks. Just turn around. Nonsense. Anyway, that's all I got today for the show. I appreciate you being with me, and I appreciate you listening to damradio.com/live. This is my last show till Sunday night. You should feel free to join me every night from 9 to 10:30 Central Standard Time. That's Chicago, USA. And also Osage Beach, Missouri. And We are here at the real state of the art studio talking to you, and I'm very glad to have you around. You can send me emails, samuelt@internationalflavor.com. My new video just came out at ukraina.ru, where my interview was conducted last week. She's supposed to send me the link here to my article that's going to be published also, and I shall share that with you. And I will see you all come Sunday night. Have a very good evening, and thanks for playing.